Now, Washington Mornings on the Mall.
105.9 FM, WMAL. It's a good day. So far, anyway, because it is only 5:07. So, I mean, it's got a long way to go for it to fall apart. But as of right now, things are great.
Yes, that's right.
I like to set the bar low when I get up in the morning, Vince.
We'll clear it. I'm so confident we'll clear it. Let's do
good.
It.
Good. All right. Let's go to New York, shall we?
Yes, please.
Not physically, because no one wants to go to New York physically, because it's just looks like something out of some kind of like Mad Max movie right now. But Governor Cuomo is... So the New York Times, they are on him. And I find this so interesting because, you know, Governor Cuomo being a good Democrat, you know, towing the line, and he's a member of the party. So it's interesting when the state-run media goes after a member of the party. You have to wonder why. And what's happening that they're going after this member of the party, right? So the New York Times came out with a report that said his administration and about his the number of nursing home deaths. And they said in this report that senior aides to Cuomo actively, purposely sought to prevent the New York State health officials, including the commissioner, from releasing the true death toll. Remember, everybody wants, and this is in large part thanks to Janice Dean, because she has a voice, because she's a public figure. She could push and she could get out there, and she had Fox as her platform to get out there and talk about the loss of both of her in-laws in from COVID, and they were in a New York nursing home. So people want to know the true death numbers. Now, we know that the numbers from COVID, and we've been saying this all along, Vince, that ever since COVID, we're never going to know the true numbers for a lot of these states, especially the early states like New York and New Jersey, because of the way they counted the death toll, right? So what they did in a lot of these states, and not just New York and New Jersey, but in a lot of these states, what they did when it came to the death toll is that if they thought you died with COVID, you were counted. Well, if you were found in your apartment in New York dead, but the neighbor heard you cough, COVID, they counted you as a COVID death. We know in Georgia, there was a guy who died in a motorcycle accident who was counted as a COVID death. In some of these hospitals, there's been pressure to change the cause of death on the death certificate. And I believe that you can now get in Biden's, one of his new spending packages, there's so many, I lost count, that you can get, I think it's up to $9,000 in burial assistance if your loved one died from COVID. And there's ways that you, and they gave you instructions on how you can, you know, badger the doctor into changing the designation on the death certificate so you can collect the money. So the numbers, we're never truly going to know the real number of people who ever died from COVID. And one of the things they did in New York was these people from nursing homes who got sick, they went to the hospital, right? And if they died in the hospital, they were counted as a hospital death, not a nursing home death.
Well, not at first. At first, they were just counting them all as nursing home deaths. But when it became clear that Andrew Cuomo's order requiring nursing homes to take discharged patients that had COVID back into the nursing homes, when it became clear that you had people who were dying as a result of his policies, and questions started to be asked. What did New York do? They changed the way they counted. All of a sudden, the nursing home deaths plummeted. Like, you started seeing, like, wait a second, why aren't there as many nursing home deaths anymore? Well, because they were attributing the deaths of people who were taken to the hospital from nursing homes to the hospitals. They changed the way they were counting in the midst of questions about the governor's policies.
As many of these states did change the way they were counting. Phil Murphy in New Jersey changed the way they were counting. Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania changed the way they were counting. And in not just nursing home deaths, but in other ways as well. So we'll never know the true number. But anyway, so this report comes out from the New York Times. And they claim in this report that there was active obstruction on the part of senior members of his aides, of Cuomo's aides. So this is Brian Yenis on Fox reporting and putting it all together very succinctly, better than we can, talking about what is in this New York Times report and what is now being, what Cuomo is now responding.
The accusation all along has been that Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration purposely covered up the true COVID-19 nursing home death toll from the public because of fear of political consequences and because the governor was in the midst of securing a nearly $4 million book deal at the time last summer. Tonight, the New York Times reports Cuomo's top aides began working to downplay the state's nursing home death toll last spring, taking extraordinary measures to subvert the state's health department, like preventing a scientific paper that incorporated the true nursing home death data from publishing. For months, they kept an audit of the death numbers from being made public, and aides even blocked two health department letters drafted for state lawmakers from ever being sent. Governor Cuomo's administration is reportedly under investigation by the FBI and the U.S. attorney in Brooklyn for purposely withholding nursing home death data from the Department of Justice. Cuomo's top aides reportedly omitted more than 3,000 nursing home COVID-19 deaths from a July Department of Health report saying they could not verify how many residents died at hospitals, despite the fact that we know they were collecting this data since April of 2020. An attorney representing Cuomo's office denied this was a cover-up, telling Fox News the whole brouhaha here is overblown to the point where there are cynical suggestions offered for the plain and simple truth that the chamber wanted only to release accurate information that they believed was totally unassailable. The New York State Assembly is currently in the midst of impeachment investigation of Cuomo. Tonight, New York State Republicans are calling that impeachment investigation a sham, saying there is more than enough evidence right now to impeach him. They're also pointing to multiple scandals, including the multiple allegations of sexual harassment. And just now, the Democratic Assemblyman Ron Kim here in New York, Brett, says that all those people standing with the governor at these press conferences over the last couple of weeks are endorsing this kind of behavior. Brett, Vince.
So this is active obstruction. And what's amazing to me, Vince, is he still hasn't been impeached yet. It's amazing. Now, he responded to this report yesterday. We'll tell you what Andrew Cuomo had to say in his defense in light of these new allegations. It's 5:15 investigation.
Garbage.
Cuomo said this was all politics and all a political football that then morphed into an investigation, which made all the lawyers very careful about what the information was that they put out.
It's garbage is what it is. No other state was doing that. Not a single state was changing, was covering up the fact that you had deaths happening at hospitals. A bunch of other states screwed up the nursing home policies, that's for sure. A lot of states, you mentioned them a moment ago, because a lot of states were sending sick patients back to nursing homes, and that hurt those nursing home patients. They were dying. But New York is the only one that actively changed the way that they were counting these deaths in order to downplay the number of people who were actually dying as a result of being infected in nursing homes. That's the whole thing. And that change came in early May. New York started quietly changing the way they were doing death counts, because the Cuomo administration was trying to cover it up. It was the product of their own policies. And Andrew Cuomo was much more interested in getting a multi-million dollar book advance to demonstrate how successful he was at handling the coronavirus than he wasn't actually taking care of the people of his state. And what did it result in, Mary? Well, here's one example. Here's one thing. The thousands of people who died in nursing homes, if just 89 fewer of them hadn't died, New York would be keeping a congressional district
this year.
True.
Yeah.
But New York just lost one. Why? Well, Andrew Cuomo killed it off. He killed it off. And so he has been a horrific failure as a governor in New York. And in particular on this issue, when so many of his citizens have died as a result of his policies, and he's trying desperately to claim that it's everybody else's fault.
Well, it is everyone else's fault, including what does everybody do? What do all the Democrats do? Who do they blame? He blamed President Trump and his administration for using the pandemic against Democrat governors for political purposes. And he said that the Justice Department's investigation of New York nursing home deaths is a political probe. Cuomo said Attorney General Barr was a political operative of the president.
How can you say that? How can you say that it's Trump's fault when Trump directed the nation's stockpile of ventilators to your state because your state needed them. Trump puts the comfort off the coast and you don't use it. Like, the administration went out of its way to say, okay, New York's got a special early case of coronavirus that's just running roughshod through the state and hurting a lot of people. So they directed all these resources to New York. And now Cuomo has the audacity to come back and be like, you know who was really responsible for the death of my residents? It was Donald Trump. It wasn't me and my nursing home policy.
Yep. He went on to say that they didn't know what numbers to report because different states counted nursing home deaths differently.
Yeah, his.
He said, who do you attribute that death to? Do you attribute it to a nursing home or do you attribute it to a hospital? How about if you were in a nursing home and got sick and then were sent to a hospital and you died in the hospital? Who do you attribute that death to?
Yes.
So he's trying to muddy the waters there, but
of
there's no question.
Is.
What about the people who were in the hospital and then were sent back to nursing homes and infected people?
Yeah. What is the point of gathering the data if not to establish where the infection occurred?
Well, he says that the only number that mattered was the total number of deaths. He said COVID came here before anybody knew it was here. That's a fact. It was here for months before anyone knew it was here. Fact. The federal government failed to diagnose the fact that it was here. Fact. The staff brought COVID into nursing homes unknowingly. Fact.
Staff.
So he's blaming the staff.
Yep.
But he's blamed the staff before. That's not new.
No. And it's because it's everybody else's fault except for his.
Yes, but yet it was his administration that told those nursing homes and the rehabilitation centers that if you didn't take patients back who were recuperating out of the hospitals, if you didn't take them, you were going to be fined to the point of those fines being crippling. And the nursing home administration on that conference call that we found out about who said this is going to kill people. But they were forced to do it because if they didn't, the fines would have been crippling. And those were fines put in place by Andrew Cuomo.
So this New York Times piece this week, I mean, a lot of what we're discussing right now are things that we knew about, we've known about for months. We knew last year about the way that New York State had changed the way it was counting nursing home deaths. And the whole time he was sticking his hands in his ears saying, la, 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 I can't hear you. I have nothing to do with that. That was Andrew Cuomo's reaction to this. And then, of course, to blame literally everybody else. But the new thing this week is now we've got all this paperwork from behind the scenes. Now we've got the New York Times saying, yeah, we had Andrew Cuomo's own staff were guaranteeing, ensuring that the public didn't know about this. They were stopping these reports right. from getting anywhere near the public's attention from officials within the state who knew damn well that there were people who were dying because of the administration's policies.
Well, they thought that they could hide it under total deaths. You know, instead of giving a breakdown, their push was to just give you total deaths, total number
yes.
of people who died from COVID. And again, that number we know is juiced to begin with. We know it's not a real number.
I don't know why anybody would have to juice it. We lost 500,000 people to coronavirus. It's like the whole thing, that whole thing is insane to me. Like, why even bother fudging with the numbers?
That half a million people number we know is also juiced. That for the country, we know that,
okay.
that there were people who were included in that who didn't die of COVID.
Right,
we did stories where people said, my loved one didn't die of COVID, didn't have COVID. Why does it say COVID on the death certificate?
Okay, allow me to submit, if it was half the death toll, it would still be an incredibly damaging pandemic. 250,000 people lost. So again, the idea that people are bothering with juicing numbers, who cares? I don't even begin to care about that part. Here's the thing I do care about. It's that if you know why people are dying in your state, but you're covering that fact up to make yourself look good and then allowing more people to die in that condition, you should be nowhere near the levers of power. You have abused your power to the extent that people have literally died in your state. And so in Andrew Cuomo's case, it's like this is abundantly clear. And now I'm still sitting here wondering, does he survive all of this? Because
yes.
he's got an entire establishment that's on his side. Yes, there's a New York Times report on this subject. But
New
honestly,
Yorkers don't care. He's a Cuomo.
Yeah,
care.
He's like he's still polling well in New York.
Yeah.
And
it's like he's a Clinton. They don't care. He's a Cuomo. But to your point where you say, you know, I don't care because, you know, because there's so many people died. I think he was banking on that attitude. I think he was banking on it's so overwhelming that I'm just going to give them the total death numbers and they're not going to want a breakdown. And none of this is going to matter where they died or how they died. Just look at the number of people who died.
He's trying to conceal
yes.
his own culpability in those deaths. And that's
yeah.
he should be punished for this.
He should be. He absolutely should be, just like he should have been punished, and at least we should have had an investigation into the allegations of sexual assault as well. But, of course, and that's what the Democrats are pushing. They wanted him to go down on that and not the COVID deaths. Because, again, if he goes down on this, there's a good chance you could take Murphy down. You could take Wolf in Pennsylvania down. You could, well, Gavin Newsom's already on his way. Gretchen Whitmer. So there are a number of other Democrat governors who did much of the same thing and followed Andrew Cuomo's lead when it came to nursing homes and putting patients from hospitals back into nursing homes and rehab centers.
Yeah.
And a lot of people died because of that. So they don't want him to go down on this. They want him to go down on the sexual assault allegations. And that didn't get any legs either. So I don't know. Maybe he will survive it all, probably.
Now, Washington Mornings on the Mall.
One of my favorite stories, by the way, of the past few weeks is just the conversation around, well, Joe Biden ban hamburgers. Like, look, AOC wants to do it. That's for sure. So we'll
then
see.
It'll get done.
We'll see what comes next. We've got, speaking of attacks on America, this one's a real one, apparently. CNN's got this report this week. That federal agencies are in the midst right now of investigating two possible attacks on the Trump administration last year. So here's what we know. They said there was an incident near the White House in November of last year. So that would be when Donald Trump was president of the United States. CNN does not indicate this, by the way, in the piece. You have to know how, you know, the passage of time works and who was president as of November of last year in order to get these facts out. So that's why I'm here today. I'm here to help you through this.
Thank you.
In November of last year, when Donald Trump was president, there was an incident near the White House. And it appeared similar to mysterious invisible attacks that have led to debilitating symptoms for dozens of U.S. personnel abroad. Quote, multiple sources familiar with the matter tell CNN that while the Pentagon and other agencies probing the matter have reached no clear conclusions on what happened, the fact that such an attack might have taken place so close to the White House is particularly alarming. Defense officials briefed lawmakers on the Senate and House Armed Services Committees on the matter earlier this month, including on the incident near the White House. That incident, they say, which occurred near the Ellipse, the large oval lawn on the south side of the White House, sickened one national security official, according to multiple current and former U.S. officials and sources familiar with the matter. In a separate 2019 episode, a White House official reported a similar attack while walking her dog in a Virginia suburb just outside Washington. That's according to a GQ report from last year. Mary, the CNN reports that those who were sickened reported similar symptoms to CIA and State Department personnel impacted overseas. Yeah. And officials quickly began to investigate the incident as a possible Havana syndrome attack. That name refers to unexplained symptoms that U.S. personnel in Cuba began experiencing in late 2016, involving a varying set of complaints that includes ear popping, vertigo, pounding headaches, and nausea, sometimes accompanied by unidentified piercing directional noise.
They say it sounds like crickets, right? They said it sounded like a swarm of crickets. So here's the thing. Here's my question. I have a lot of questions. But so when we were discussing this, how it happened, allegedly happened in Cuba. Well, we're pretty sure it did, not even allegedly, that they would hear that sound like the crickets. But it was happening outside of the embassy, or it was, and you could hear it was centered near the American embassy. So you would assume that it would be like people who worked there, also their homes, the homes of diplomats, right, in Cuba. Outside walking your dog, how do you target just one person outside walking their dog? You know, someone would have to know that this person is associated with the administration and that they're outside walking their dog, and they could. So was somebody following her? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of creepy if this is a foreign entity that is following Americans and targeting members of the Trump administration, the person who was president at that time, whose name shall never be said.
Yes, it's not even mentioned here.
I've morphed into Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
But, you know, a White House official walking her dog in a suburb outside of Washington, D.C. in Virginia. Like, that's really targeted, don't you think?
Like, big time.
Right. So how did I, it blows my mind. That's, I guess that's my thing, is I can't wrap my brain about how do you just target those people?
Totally. That all great questions. And this was not just limited to Cuba. And now we find out potentially the White House and White House officials who worked in the Trump administration. But it also happened to U.S. personnel in Russia and in China. And the reports from CNN here, they say that the State Department at one point concluded that these were likely the results of microwave energy attacks being conducted against American personnel. That's remarkable. Now, apparently in Cuba, what we did in reaction to it is we drew down the number of officials we had there. We were starting to pull U.S. personnel out of the outpost in Havana. But should that be our reaction? I mean, you would think, like, the important point is if Americans are under attack, and including under this very bizarre arrangement where they're undergoing what appears to be, quote, microwave energy attacks.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the answer to be, like, we've got to figure out really quickly who's doing this and then shut them down, like, aggressively?
That's what you would think. But that says to me that we don't know exactly what's happening. That our reaction was to shut down, you know, bring these people home. This uh-huh. and the news that it was happening in Russia and China as well is new. That hadn't really gotten a lot of play. The attacks in Cuba got a lot of news.
I'm starting to worry we have no idea what's going on anywhere. Did you get that feeling for a second? You're like, wait a second. We can't even figure out these microwave energy attacks that we're supposedly under. We can't figure out the UFOs that are flying past all of our aircraft. We're like, what is that? Nobody knows. But we're working on it.
It would be like we have a president who has no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Suddenly no one has any idea what's going on. Well, that doesn't bring me any comfort. It's 544 on WMAL.
Where Washington comes to talk.
I love your show. I am a loyal listener.
105.9 FM.
We just talk about it.
WMAL.
That Kerry had, the allegation is that he had revealed something classified about an ally's military operations against Iran, an adversary of both Israel and the United States, which is horrific to find out and something that we need a lot more answers on. Now, a bunch of Republicans have called for an investigation into John Kerry to get to the bottom of this. Did Kerry betray an ally? Was he giving away classified information to an adversary? And the excuses started piling up immediately. John Kerry, first of all, just categorically denied all of it. He was like, this is just not true, he said on his Twitter account. And in so doing, he retweeted someone else who had a different excuse entirely. And that excuse was, look, even if Kerry had talked about this, this was public knowledge. That there was already reports that Israel had officials who were anonymously taking credit in open press for attacking Iranian interests in Syria. In fact, there was a Reuters report from several years ago that said something to that effect, that an Israeli official says that they've struck Iranian targets in Syria over 200 times. Okay. So the question you and I had, Mary, as one would, is, okay, what were the order of all of those events? Let's say Kerry had that conversation and there's public reporting. In what direction did that go? Did Kerry tell Zarif first and then the reporting started coming out about this? Or did Kerry confirm public reporting that was based on anonymous sources when he shouldn't have been doing anything like that? Well, now we've got more information. Overnight, the Washington Free Beacon reports that leaked audio tape of a conversation by Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif indicates that he had exactly zero knowledge of these covert Israeli military strikes before John Kerry provided him the information. They say this on the phone call. These details are likely to further fuel calls from leading Republicans for Kerry's firing or resignation. The Times did not provide further details on all of this, but an independent translation of the audio tape commissioned by the Washington Free Beacon shows that Zarif went on to clarify that he had no prior knowledge of these Israeli strikes before Kerry told him. Quote, Kerry told me that Israel had launched 200 strikes against Iran. You didn't know? Asked his interviewer. No. No, says Zarif. Mary, the New York Times left this detail out of their reporting, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And What's interesting is that this is why I think there's a lot more to this story than is being led on, and you know why you're getting silence from the White House, and Jen Psaki won't answer any questions about this because they're trying to come up with, you know, what are we going to say? What is our message going to be here? They all get on the same page. But wasn't John Kerry working for the Obama administration when they flew pallets of cash over to Iran? Right. So the Iranians like John Kerry. Right. We know that John Kerry was talking to the Iranians, trying to figure out how to get them back, the U.S. back into the Iran deal when Donald Trump was president. And, yep. You know, so they like John Kerry. So there's no reason for them to make this story up. There's no reason for them to make this up, record the interview, leak the tape to make it seem as if it was leaked. All that would not make any sense. So this idea of, oh, it's a misinformation campaign or anything like that, doesn't have legs because of John Kerry's close relationship with Iran and pallets of cash. So it seems to me as if their best angle is like, well, this was already public. But like you said, now we know that was not already public.
Yeah, this
was
not
beforehand. But I think that little detail goes unnoticed, gets swept under the rug, and no one will report it. It's not going to be loud. I think he gets away with it. I just do. I don't think John Kerry is going to be held to account. He wasn't held to account for conducting foreign policy when he was not against the administration of power, violation of the Logan Act. That could be criminal. But Joe Biden loves the Logan Act. He wanted to go after General Mike Flynn with the Logan Act. Kerry walks. He gets away with it. I would be shocked if anything comes of this.
Number of Republicans already responding to the Free Beacons reporting overnight and calling for his resignation Ted Cruz saying if this tape is verified, it would signal catastrophic and disqualifying recklessness by Kerry to Foreign Minister Zarif that endangered the safety of Americans and our allies. Some pressure from the right this morning. We'll see how much it's sustained and what it yields.
Now, Washington Mornings on the Mall.
You know he did a good job because they did not go after the content of the speech. They didn't go after what he said about the speech on social media. They went after the color of Tim Scott's skin. They went after him personally. They didn't go after what he said.
It's amazing the extent to which the left just rose to the challenge, right? It was like, Tim Scott's like, you know who's really racist? The left. That's what he said during the speech. And then what did they do? They got Uncle Tim trending worldwide within minutes of the speech concluding. It's like, okay, prove his point, why don't you?
Exactly. But that's how, again, that goes to my point, though. That's how you know he gave a good speech. And he actually didn't sound as if he might nod off at any given point during this speech. You know, that's the thing about Joe Biden is that he starts off strong. And I even said to my husband, I said, I wonder if he got a nap because like he was very forceful and he was engaging in the beginning. And then he does that slow die off thing like that slow where he just slowly runs out of steam and he just starts to whisper. He does like this weird whispering thing. And you find yourself leaning in to try to hear what he's saying. Like, yes. what is he saying?
You're right. The way Biden's speech went, it was like the way a parent reads to a child as they're falling asleep. And like then and by the end of the speech, you're trying to like ease your way out of the room as you finish the book because the kid is already asleep. So Joe Biden is like, and the puppy and the kitten lived happily ever after. And then he's like climbing away. Like,
yeah,
he had to get out of the room.
Exactly. And it just isn't good. The other thing, can I just say, this isn't about Joe Biden, but I just have to say this. How many times, if you took a shot every time he said, my fellow Americans, you would have been loaded halfway through that speech because he kept saying, my fellow Americans. I was like, okay, once or twice in the speech, get it. Uh-huh. It's the thing presidents do. Not every fifth sentence.
I don't know. I felt so welcomed as he was telling me that my rights in the Constitution are conditional on his power.
Well, that is true.
That one line, I mean, that was an incredible line. No amendment is absolute. He's used this a couple times. Like, wait a second. I thought the whole point of the Bill of Rights was to declare the stuff that you're not allowed to touch. And now I'm finding out, no, actually, you have veto power over all of those things.
That's right. Because he's a member of the party. So, the Vice President, Kamala Harris, was on Good Morning America. I believe she was with George Stephanopoulos. And he asked her about Senator Tim Scott's speech. And he said that this is not a racist country. And some on the left found that that was quite shocking.
They were so mad.
How dare you say this is not a racist country? This is a racist country. We all know that. America's a terrible, horrible place.
The entire basis of our power is that phrase. How dare
yes.
you?
So he asked her thoughts about Tim Scott's speech. Now listen very carefully.
I believe that we need to address, well, first of all, no, I don't think America is a racist country, but we also do have to speak truth about the history of racism in our country and its existence today.
So America's not a racist country, but racism exists today. So there's she's brilliant straddling of the fence, but so the right was kind of slamming her, but I gotta say, I agree with her. I hear what she's saying. I do not think America is an inherently racist country.
Why was the right slamming her for that?
Because they were saying that she contradicted herself in the same sentence.
Oh, well, she did say, I mean, if you listen to the actual sentence, she said, I don't think America's a racist country. But then she said that she thinks there is some racism today. That is not something I would disagree with at all.
I'm with you on this one. I do not believe that America is an inherently racist country. I think overall Americans are very tolerant and very inclusive. And you see Americans of all stripes hanging out together. Yeah. We've got friends, no big deal. Are there racists in America? Yes. Here's the other thing. I don't think that all racists come in a white package. I know. I think that you could be racist and not be white. I know. It's shocking.
I know. You know, I saw somebody, I think, make the analogy yesterday because people were saying, people are trying, like, you know, because nuance, like, people are incapable of it now, you know, especially on the internet. But pointing out, like, okay, there's a difference between saying racism exists and then the country is fundamentally racist. And the guy responded, yeah, like, for instance, like, my local grocery store, whatever state he lives in, sells liquor, but I don't call it the liquor store. I was like, good point, you know? It's like, that some things exist. That is right. But what's at the core of saying America is a racist country? If you use a phrase like that, what is at the core of it? It's saying that this is a bad place to live. That it's not a good country.
Yeah.
That it doesn't have redemptive qualities. That it isn't the best country to live on planet Earth, which it is, by the way. It's designed to tear the country down, not to build it up, not to fix things that are wrong. So it's pretty interesting. And Tim Scott, it's amazing that so many people were upset that he said that. Yeah. And then Kamala Harris says the same exact thing. And everyone's
like, well, the next sentence after that was, she said, one of the greatest threats to our national security is domestic terrorism manifested by white supremacists. So right. She went back to, you know, she got back into the mold. So the left didn't come after her because it's only white people who are racist.
Right. So when you say people on the right were mad at Kamala Harris, what I was thinking is like for the reasons she deserves. Which is like, okay, you might be saying that now. I don't think America's a racist country is what she said. But you're constantly trying to whip people into racial frenzies and to get people to dislike each other on the basis of their skin color. Like, you're routinely doing that.
Absolutely. And like I said, she reverted to form when she talked about domestic terrorism manifested by white supremacists. That's the biggest problem facing America today, according to Kamala Harris. I just want to get real quickly here to Tim Scott. He was on Fox and Friends yesterday, and he responded. He was asked about that hashtag that you brought up, Uncle Tim, that was trending on Twitter for hours before they finally took it down as being racist.
Oops,
for
we missed
hours.
That one.
It took him a long time to figure out that was racist. And so they asked him about that and about that hashtag Uncle Tim trending.
Well, I'll just say that the response to my speech last night from the left was for me to mention that intolerance so often comes from the left, with words like Uncle Tim and the N-word being used against me by the left. And last night, what was trending in social media was Uncle Tim. Mm-hmm. And they doubled down on this concept of liberal oppression. It is stunning in 2021 that those who speak about ending discrimination want to end it by more discrimination.
And what's sick about that is that they're trying to intimidate him into silence. I mean, that's why they're being bigoted. They want him to be him to shut up. Stop it. You're not serving our agenda, so we're going to use racist slurs against you until you obey.
Just very quickly, I just want to play this one piece. This is Joy Behar, just very quickly here, and then we'll get to traffic and weather. Joy Behar, of course, because who could be one of the dumbest people in the world, commenting on Tim Scott and racism.
Tim Scott, He does not seem to understand, and a lot of them don't seem to understand, the difference between a racist country and a systemic racism. They don't seem to get the difference. Yes, maybe it's not a racist country. Maybe Americans, the majority, are not racist. But we live in a country with systemic racism.
I love when a white rich liberal lectures a black person on racism.
Well, also, like,
I just love that.
Blackface lady is telling us what's racist, you know? She's like...
Exactly. 6:15.
It was an homage, she said.
You know, so poor Hunter. We should feel for him.
Remember when Trump claimed that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue?
Oh, isn't everybody flipped
and
out?
He would still have all this like support. Can Hunter Biden do that test? Can he do the I would like shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue test and we just see how it goes? Like
not
what?
Actually shoot someone, just say it.
No, actually shoot someone.
Oh, you want him? Oh, okay.
No, I want to see the limits of his immunity. I want to find out, like, how much he's protected by the law in the United States. Like, what crimes could Hunter Biden get away with? Because he's gotten away with a lot so far.
He's like, gotten away with everything.
How far could Hunter Biden take it?
Yeah, well, he clearly he knows that he can get away with pretty much anything. And Dad, who, again... I watched that show, Intervention. Oh, I used to watch it. I don't watch it anymore. But, and
is
again.
Is this a TLC show?
How did you know? No, I think this was Discovery.
Oh,
it may
okay.
have been Discovery, but I don't watch it anymore.
Gotcha.
But it's interesting that you watch and you learn what enabling is by watching this show. And you see how these parents love these children into addiction. Well, they're in addiction and they never get out of it because the parents keep bailing them out. Because, mm-hmm. well, they don't want them to go to jail. And, of course, the interventionist is like, well, that's clearly what they need. They have to hit rock bottom. And I think Joe Biden does the same thing with Hunter Biden. From the outside looking in, it seems as if, you know, he loves his son very much, which I, you know, is great, but he doesn't let his son have consequences for his bad actions. And he needs that because he's an adult. So, yeah. You know, remember how Joe Biden told us that in 2019 that if he were elected president, that nobody in his family would have any business relationship with any foreign corporation or country. Remember that?
Right.
Well, it appears that that was, you know, another one of those lies. And we would know that if the Washington Post were still tracking Joe Biden lies. But they've decided that they're not going to do that anymore, you know, because he's a saint and never lies. Well, it appears that Hunter still holds a minority stake in a Chinese equity firm, a private equity firm, 100 days into Joe Biden's term, according to business records. He holds a 10% equity stake in BHR Partners through his company, Skinny Atlas LLC. According to two independent services that provide business records on Chinese corporations and based on China's National Credit Information Publicity System. Now, Biden told us that no one in my family will have an office in the White House, will sit in on meetings as if they are a cabinet member, will, in fact, have any business relationship with anyone that relates to a foreign corporation or foreign country, mm-hmm. period, end of story. Okay. So the company, this BHR Partners, in which Hunter Biden holds a 10% equity stake, is owned by the Chinese state-controlled Bank of China.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no big deal. It's just, you know, the son of the president of the United States has a pretty gigantic financial stake in a company that's controlled by our chief foreign adversary.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, Jen Psaki was questioned about that and back in February. And she said, well, he was in the process of divesting his ownership stake. And I thought, we discussed this, Vince. We're like, well, don't you just pick up your phone and call your broker and just say, hey, could you sell those shares for me? And it's done by the end of the day.
Honestly,
it's pretty weird how quickly that happens. But it was a process. He was unwinding his investments.
Honestly, I have no idea how to untangle myself from a massive Chinese investment that was made on the basis of my relationship with my father. I don't know. Maybe there's a True. Different process for that. You know, maybe it takes messenger pigeons, maybe some smoke signals. It's a much more complicated process than we realized.
Apparently so, because I know when I want to sell stock, I call Chris, my broker, and I just tell Chris, I'm like, hey, Chris, I think we want to get rid of blah, 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 blah. Maybe we'll buy this. He goes, okay. And by the end of the day, I get all the paperwork is all sent to me that it's all been done.
Wow. You should put Hunter in touch with your guy.
I know. You should learn to talk to Chris. He's a great guy. He'll do well for you. Maybe not as well as investing in, you know, a Chinese company that, yeah. you know, daddy knows. But, you know, you'd still make some money on your investments. I can at right. least get guarantee you that. So, yeah, so apparently he's still investing since, unwinding his investments since February.
Yeah, promises made, promises, wait, no, not kept at all. Hunter Biden still invested in China. Thanks for that, White House. Oh, by the way, that TV series Intervention, I looked it up.
Yes.
Still going strong. It's on the A&E channel. It's been running for 22 seasons, and Mary Walters consumed some number of those.
Not anymore. If they get Hunter Biden on there, I'm definitely in.
She's back.
Definitely back. 623 on WMAL.
105.9 FM.
I love that you offer different opinions.
Washington's Mall. WMAL.
That's really important to us.
Where Washington comes to talk.
Oh.
Now, Washington Mornings on the Mall. 105.9 FM.
In particular, because he was the president's personal attorney and he was conducting an investigation overseas into the extent to which the Biden family was corrupt. And for doing that, boy, that you don't do that. You're not allowed to look into.
Don't go against the party.
The casual corruption of the establishment. That's how you get impeached. That's how you get your life destroyed. And Rudy Giuliani may be seeing the consequences of that this week as the Biden FBI raided his apartment in New York and started, you know, gathering up all of his communications devices with some pretty interesting exceptions. Now, we know a lot more about this because Rudy Giuliani appeared for a television interview last night with Tucker Carlson. I want to share this with you. Here is what Giuliani says happened as FBI agents came to his home.
Well, about 6 o'clock in the morning, there was a big bang, bang, bang on the door. And outside were seven FBI agents with a warrant for electronics. And I looked at the warrant and I said, you know, this is extraordinary because I've offered to give these to the government and talk it over with the government for 2 years. I don't know why they have to do this. The agents seemed somewhat apologetic, I might say. They were very, very professional and very gentlemanly. The only time they got perturbed is at the end of the search, when they had taken about, I'd say, 7 or 8 electronic items of mine, which is what they took, and two of someone else's. They weren't taking the 3 hard drives, which, of course, are electronic devices. They just mimic the computer. I said, well, don't you want these? And they said, what are they? I said, those are Hunter Biden's hard drives. And they said, no. I said, are you sure you don't want them? I mean, the warrant required them to take it. And they said, no. And I, one last time, I said, don't you think you should take it? And they said, no. Now, Hunter Biden's hard drives fall within the scope of the subpoena. The subpoena required them to take all electronics, but they decided to leave that behind. And they also were completely content to rely on my word. That these were Hunter Biden's hard drives. I mean, they could have been Donald Trump's. They could have been Vladimir Putin's. They could have been anybody's. But they relied on me, the man who had to be raided in the morning, because I'm going to destroy the evidence. I've known about this for 2 years, Tucker. I could have destroyed the evidence years ago. I didn't destroy the evidence because the evidence is exculpatory. It proves that the president and I and all of us are innocent.
Very important points being made, and as part of our conversation yesterday revolved around this, too. So they were taking Rudy Giuliani's word. So there's a warrant designed to compel the person who's being targeted here to turn over all the devices in their home. And when they start rifling through the devices, you know, the FBI agents, you know, unless they've got some technology in their brains we're not aware of where they can actually read data off a hard drive with their fingers, they have to rely on Rudy to tell them, like, oh, those are Hunter Biden's hard drives. And they just said, well, okay, we'll just leave these behind rather than take them and look at them, because you would think the warrant would entitle them to take those things. And how would they be able to sort through them just on the basis of the word of the person you're raiding?
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it, that they did that. And this is, to me, the biggest thing here, and we're going to have Mark Levin joining us later, and I'm so interested to get his take on this. He'll be joining us at 7:35, because my question with all this, immediately my radar went up, because we know the Southern District of New York is going after Donald Trump and his sons, and they're trying to get him on anything they possibly can. Remember, they have the man, they're searching for the crime. They want to know what's
like,
in his taxes.
Yeah.
We're going to get something on him. What are you looking for? Well, we want to see his taxes. Well, what are you looking for in his taxes? Well, we want to see them.
Yep.
By seizing these electronic devices, did they also seize privileged conversations and emails and correspondence between the president and his personal attorney?
How could they not?
They may very well be on there.
That's right.
Are they then going to use that information and go, well, while we were looking for this and we found nothing there, look what we found over here on President Trump, and now we're going to go after him?
Great questions. Now, what's the other element of this is, like, why did they have to do a raid on his apartment in order to get this material? Why did they have to do it in this format? Like, Rudy Giuliani did what about just asking for the information, asking for his materials, asking him to turn it over? Why did they need to get a warrant to do this? Rudy says that is illegal, what they did. Here's cut 10. Here's Rudy Giuliani. He says this is not legal. Look, Rudy was the former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. The guy knows what's up. Listen.
I am a lawyer who has prosecuted a lot more serious cases that have been prosecuted in the U.S. attorney's office since I left. And the reality is that that warrant is completely illegal. The only way you can get a search warrant is if you can show that there's some evidence that the person is going to destroy the evidence or is going to run away with the evidence. Well, I've had it for 2 years and I haven't destroyed it. And they also got it from the iCloud. So there was no justification for that warrant. It is an illegal, unconstitutional warrant, one of many that this Department of Injustice tragically has done. And it breaks my heart because I belong to the Justice Department. And I think I had a record that's a hell of a lot better than theirs.
An extraordinary, extraordinary assessment. And again, the drama is only getting greater in this story. Mark Levin, as you mentioned, coming up at 7:35 this morning. A lot of legal questions for him because...
According to TMZ, they're saying that a total of 5 people have now been arrested in the dog napping of Lady Gaga's 2 French bulldogs, the Koji and Gustav, the 2 French bulldogs. And they were stolen in February when a car drives up, this like van drives up, and they shoot her dog walker in the chest, Ryan Fisher. He got shot in the chest. He had to have part of his lung removed, but he survived. He's out of the hospital, and I'm hoping Lady Gaga picked up the tab for that hospital visit. That one would hope that. So they announced that a total of 5 people have been arrested, 3 who allegedly pulled off the actual dog napping and shooter. And the other 2 suspects were arrested for accessory to murder. One of the cops are saying that one of them is the father of one of the alleged dog nappers. Because, you know, the family that commits crimes together stays together. The LAPD believes that he contacted a female friend and recruited her to drop the dogs off and then claim the reward money for them. Cops say the father and the 3 people booked for attempted murder are all known gang members. Cops got a video of where the dogs were dropped off in an alley days after the dog napping. So I didn't even realize this happened just a couple days after the dog napping. She got the dogs back, and it became key evidence in hunting down the criminals. The woman who, quote unquote, found the dogs was also arrested. She's one of the 5.
Yeah.
Cops were suspicious of her from the beginning when she turned the dogs in. They were suspicious of this whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And so Gaga was advised not to pay the $500,000 reward to her.
Yeah. So what I didn't realize when this story first came out, I had no idea about the market for French bulldogs. I didn't realize that they were such valuable animals. My impression from those original headlines was like, oh man, somebody must really hate Lady Gaga or whatever, and they attacked her dog walker and stole her dogs. That's horrible. What I didn't realize is that it sounds like there was money, that this was all about being able to sell these dogs on some sort of market where, you know, people would pay top dollar. These animals apparently go for, on average, $2,200 a piece. And that top quality French bulldogs can go upwards of $10,000. So I guess they thought they were going to make, you know, some quick coin by robbing this guy and then selling these dogs. But then all of a sudden, when Lady Gaga offers $500,000 as a reward, their financial incentives change. They're like, well, we've got the dogs. All we got to do is find some lady to walk in there, you know, and claim, like, hey, I'm turning it in. Tell the lady, like, hey, we'll give you a cut. Just go turn the dogs in, and everybody's going to get filthy rich. We'll get a lot more money than just selling the dogs. And then we'll go on our merry way. But that's, of course, how they ended up getting caught.
Yeah, if that woman were smart, she would have said, okay, cool, I'll do it. Contacted the police, turned those guys in, returned the dogs to Lady Gaga, and she would have gotten the money.
That's exactly Boom. Right. Be cutthroat about it, and you would have actually That's gotten right. the reward.
Yeah, they apparently did not know that these were Lady Gaga's dogs. They apparently didn't know that the dog walker worked for Lady Gaga. And she actually has three. Asia was the other bulldog, was not harmed in the incident. They only got two out of the three. And the dog walker described Asia as his guardian angel who gave him the determination to survive. He said, my panic screams calmed as I looked at her, even though it registered the blood pooling around her tiny body was my own, he wrote in an Instagram post. I cradled Asia as best I could, thanked her for all the incredible adventures we've been on together, apologized that I couldn't defend her brothers, and then resolved that I would still try to save them and myself. Mm. She should keep this dog walker. This guy is definitely, she should definitely keep him because he tried to keep the one dog from running off even as he was shot.
Oh, that's, I just can't imagine, like, what's the point of that? You're shooting a guy to steal a $2,000 dog? Like, what?
Because they're gang members. That's all this is about. This is they don't work for a living. They take what other people, they could be politicians without the bullets, but you know, they take from others because some people have this and they said, I want that. They steal it and then they resell it.
I'm glad.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying I'm glad the cops caught these guys.
Yeah,
very much.
No, so am I. I mean, I look at how much stuff that was looted from Targets and all these other places in Portland and Minneapolis and all these places that probably wound up on eBay and got sold and people made money off of it. You know, I hate to break it down to be that callous about it, but you know, what's the difference when people rob from others and sell it and benefit from something that somebody else has? It's really sad, but I'm glad in the end nobody died. They got the dogs back and the criminals got caught. So it's a good story. 6:51 on WMAL.
We've talked a lot about the governor's race, a little bit less about the other race involved there, the lieutenant governor's race. Let's talk to a candidate who's in that race, Tim Hugo. You remember him. He served in the Virginia House of Delegates from 2003 to 2020, and he is running for the nomination for Virginia's lieutenant governor. Tim, good morning.
Vince, Mary, good morning. Thanks for having me this morning. Happy Friday to you.
Same to you. Great to have you. Talk a little bit about your candidacy and why you think you will prevail next weekend.
Hey, look, here's what we are. You know, I am the conservative pro-life candidate who voted against tax increases, who actually carried a tax cut, who's demonstrated he can win in Northern Virginia where we're getting killed. And look, there is a reason that guys like Ken Cuccinelli and Penny Nance from Concerned Women America and Senator Black, all the leading conservatives from Northern Virginia and across the state are endorsing me. Look, we need to win. I can win. And somebody asked me the other day, and this is really what it boils down to. Somebody asked me that, hey, how are you going to work with the Democrats if you get elected? And I said, point blank, I'm not going to be there to work with the Democrats. You know what? If a train's rolling over you at 70 miles an hour or 15 miles an hour, it's rolling over you. I'm there to stop the Democrat left-wing socialist train and roll it back and send it back to where it came from. So that's what I want to do. And look, I've demonstrated I can do it over almost two decades. And we want to do it, and we've had enough. Let's take the fight to them. And if we don't fight now, man, I think we'll leave our kids a battlefield they may not be able to win. What did Burke say? The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is good men and good women to do nothing. 2021 is the year to fight and do something.
You mentioned winning, and you know, winning over Northern Virginia, and that does always seem to be the speed bump for Republicans. It seems to be that dead end for them and what stops them from being successful in Virginia, and that's Northern Virginia. What is the one issue, just give me one issue, that you think is the winning issue for Republicans to win over the voters in Northern Virginia?
Mary, I think it's a couple quick things here, and you talked about it. You just said a minute ago about opening the economy. I think it's opening the economy, opening the schools, and public safety. I mean, we've got y'all have talked about it, and Larry's talked about it. We've got Commonwealth attorneys that aren't prosecuting any misdemeanors. We're going to have crime going out. We've got police quitting in droves. You guys have talked about that. I think public safety, the family, and the economy, things like that, that's going to win in Northern Virginia. And then I'll take my conservative record across the state, and we'll win. And we'll put together, we'll help whoever the gubernatorial nominee is, and we'll make a difference.
Tim, while we have you, we do want to sort through a news story that involves your campaign. We see the Washington Post has been reporting yesterday. They put out a report with the headline, Anti-Gay Messaging Throws a Cloud Over Virginia GOP Lieutenant Governor's Race. And they point to two things in particular. One, a campaign flyer that was sent out by your campaign that showed one of your one of your opponents, Delegate Glenn R. Davis, wearing a rainbow striped shirt, and they say highlighting several causes that you argue are not Republican, including protecting members of the LGBTQ community from discrimination. The second thing they point to is an anonymous cell phone text campaign or text that was sent out to delegates in Virginia that that said that Davis is a, quote, gay Democrat. You're on the record in this piece disavowing that text message and saying that you're looking to get to the bottom of who sent it. Tell us more about all of this and what you think of the reaction to it.
Yeah, one, whoever sent that text, that's wrong. It's an offensive. And you just don't do things like that. That's just beyond the pale. Glenn Davis is a good man. We just disagree on issues. I sent out a piece saying this. Glenn's a good guy, nice guy, but he voted for the biggest tax increase in Virginia history. He voted for in-state tuition for illegals. He voted for driver's license for illegals. He voted for a budget that provides for taxpayer-funded abortion, and he voted for the expansion of Obamacare. That's what I said. And my other opponent, Winsome Sears, again, a nice person, but in 2018, she ran against, after Republicans had picked their nominee, she ran against the Republican nominee. And so Tim Kaine is sitting in the United States Senate now, partially thanks to my other opponent, Winsome Sears, voting for abortion, taxes, and to steal your guns. I just think, you know, Glenn is a nice guy, but a liberal Republican. Winsome Sears, a nice person, but you don't run against the Republican nominee. In fact, you know, she's saying she's the kind of the second coming for the Republicans. She's really the second coming of the Never Trumpers when you do things like that. I believe in two things. Never surprise your friends and dance with who brung you. I won't surprise you, and I'm going to dance with the people that brung me, and that's the conservatives and the Republicans, like I've done for almost two decades, and I'll win. So that's where we are on that. And look, this is a real – we have a real opportunity here. I think the pendulum is swinging back. You saw the president talk about this huge – you know, expansion of government that I think people are going to be very wary of, and they should be. And we're seeing what's happening on the national level with AOC and I call it the AOCing of the Democratic Party. I think people are going to say, that's not what we wanted, and that's not what we're voting for. Like I said, I'm a conservative who's won. We're going to talk about the police. We're going to talk about public safety, schools, opening the economy. And if we do that and we have good gubernatorial candidate, good AG candidate, we are going to win in November. And say, America and Virginia, we're back.
Yes, and I think those are all really great winning issues, schools and you know, the pendulum, you're saying that the progressives are just too liberal and they wanted to defund the police. I think all of those things are all messages that win. But, you know, having gay friends who are Republican, you know, they look at something like this flyer and say, well, why would you do something like put something out that says, you know, don't be fooled, Glenn Davis is no Republican, alluding to the fact that because he's at a gay pride event and wearing a brightly colored shirt, that, you know, it comes out to people who are gay, who are Republican, and look at that and go, wait a minute. You know, why? I guess my question is, why would you open that door for yourself and, you know, and send that kind of message to gays who maybe would vote Republican?
Mary, I did not. And I'll just be point blank about it. If you look, I will say Glenn Davis that needs a fashion consultant. He's a good guy. But, you know, I didn't mention anything about that. I reprinted a New York Times article. If you look at the whole piece, it just reprints a New York Times article. That's all it did. Now, people have tried to make stuff out of it. It's not, because I have gay friends, and you know what? I respect them. They're my friends. They're good people, and I'll just say that as clearly as I can. They are good people. They are good people, friends, and that's it. But I will say Glenn is liberal on other issues. That's all I'm saying. And I'll say Winsome Sears is a good person, but you don't run against the Republican nominee. That's all I'm saying. People are just trying to distract from a liberal record. People are trying to distract from the things they've done. I didn't mention, if you read the whole piece of mail, it says Glenn voted for the biggest tax increase in Virginia history. Glenn voted for Obamacare. Glenn voted for in-state tuition for illegals. Glenn voted for a Medicaid expansion. That's what it said.
Tim Hugo, I haven't seen the mailer. I was looking for it. I haven't been able to see an actual image of it. But my presumption is if you share a picture of one of your opponents in a rainbow shirt, what you're really trying to suggest is the guy's out there being a liberal activist. Is that the suggestion that's why a photo like that would be picked?
And it was a photo. He's a good – look, Glenn Davis is a good man. and a good family person and a great friend, but he's a liberal Republican, and I took it from his Facebook page.
Gotcha.
Events, you know, they take pictures of me from my Facebook page too. True. Every time. And I got to tell you, they never take a good picture of me.
No, they never. That's part of it. They never do, right?
Wait a second. I am looking at the photo now. Our producer put it in front of me. It doesn't actually look like, when people say rainbow shirt, I picture something very different. It just looks like a shirt with a lot of different colors on it. But if I looked at that photo, I wouldn't think, oh, that's a gay pride shirt or something.
No.
I'm not under that impression at all, actually, now that I'm seeing the picture.
That's what I'm saying. People are making something of nothing. But you do see, if you look at the whole piece, it talks about Obamacare, taxes. It talks about Glenn voted for a budget with taxpayer-funded abortion. Those are liberal issues.
Gotcha.
But I'll hit you hard, and I'm going to hit the Democrats hard, but I don't do cheap shots.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's good. I'm glad you're getting the opportunity to clarify, you know, exactly what you put out versus how the media is painting it, because the way the media is painting it is like, oh, no, this was him at a gay pride event, and, you know, so the message being, you know, that you're somehow tying him into, you know, the gay pride movement, which would offend the gay community. So I'm glad you're getting the opportunity to clarify.
But Mary, look, you know how some of the media are. If we're conservatives, if we walk on water, they're going to say we can't swim. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
We got to push back, and we got to keep saying, talking about the things that we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And these are issues. I don't do cheap shot. I do issues.
All right, Tim Hugo, we got to run because we got to get people to work. Thank you so much for joining us. Tim Hugo running for the GOP nomination for Virginia Lieutenant Governor. Thank you so much. Well, that's exactly what happened to the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department. BBC News reporting that a ransomware group known as Babouk is reportedly threatening to release sensitive information on police informants if they are not contacted within the next couple of days. The FBI is investigating this. Washington, D.C.'s police department said that it was aware, of unauthorized access on our server. They said, while we determine the full impact and continue to review activity, we've engaged the FBI to fully investigate this matter. Babouk is a Russian ransomware group. And they said that they have downloaded, quote, a sufficient amount of information from the police department's internal network. They have not yet locked the police out of the system yet. Screenshots that were allegedly posted to the dark web by Babouk and shared on social media suggest that they gained access to the information on criminal gang activity and police intelligence reports. They targeted the Houston Rockets basketball team earlier, claiming to have documents including player contracts and financial data. And a spokesperson for the Houston Rockets said, while the group had accessed some information, they failed to install the ransomware because they had a security system that prevented that from happening. Why don't we have those security systems on, you know, I don't know, government internet websites and servers and things like that? Like, why don't we have that on things like, I don't know, the DC Metropolitan Police Department's computer network? Why is that not on there?
Well, you know, one of the big problems with these ransomware attacks that could be avoided is update your software.
Mm-hmm.
Just update it. So the you know, one of the remarkable things about the Baltimore ransomware attack, it was happening in cities across the country, was that they just had old software. And the old software was capable of being exploited because our own government had discovered that if it wanted to spy on these systems, they had a way of actually breaking into them. They had discovered a backdoor, and they apparently hadn't told Microsoft about it because they were perfectly content with breaking into this backdoor if necessary for government purposes. But then when it became clear that and I think actually the tools themselves were stolen from our government, and then you started, and you had hackers using them to break into these systems. And finally, the feds were like, hey, Microsoft, by the way, there's a huge problem with Windows you should know about. and Microsoft's like, oh, we'll update that. They push the update, and then all of a sudden, the vulnerability disappears.
And they've upped their game. They briefly posted personnel files of at least five current and former officers, hundreds of pages, including names, social security numbers, phone numbers, financial and housing records, job histories, and polygraph assessments. Here's the thing. How can we not find these people? If you don't pay $11 in Social Security, the IRS will find that, and they will find every way to collect that money from you. How can we not find where these people are? How is this not happening?
Yeah.
I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I don't know. But anyway, so we'll see what happens with the D.C. police, the police department, and whether the government can manage to somehow, I don't know, update their software. 723 on WMAL.
Washington's Mall.
Let me tell you what actually happened.
105.9 FM. WMAL.
I appreciate it so much.
Where Washington comes to talk. Now, Washington Mornings on the Mall.
105.9 FM. WMAL. Vince, how are you, Brody?
We're doing very well. Glad to have you with us this morning. We have a bunch of questions for you because you have such wisdom, especially on these legal issues. We're watching, you know, Rudy Giuliani and a number of lawyers, actually, who have either worked for the president or around the president's interests, who are being raided this week by the Biden FBI, the Biden Justice Department. And Rudy said yesterday, Mark, that the warrant to actually seize his devices he considers illegal and unconstitutional. He said, I would have willingly turned over all of this information that they wanted, but instead they used a pretty extreme tactic. They raided his home to take those devices. Is he right? Do you think that is unconstitutional, the way they carried this out?
Well, it is unconstitutional. I spent a long time at the Department of Justice. I don't remember us doing this a lot, let alone to a key figure who used to work for a president. Rudy says he was prepared to turn over whatever they wanted, that he hadn't destroyed a single thing. Okay, under those circumstances, you make a deal and you get what you need to get through normal course of business, that is the criminal division and so forth. You don't raid somebody's house at 6 a.m. in the morning and grab all their stuff, except, of course, for the Hunter Biden hard drive. I don't even understand how a judge would approve such a thing. Listen, the system is crumbling. The system is crumbling because the Democrat Party and their sycophants and their surrogates aren't playing by the rules anymore. And they want to blow out their any opponents that they have, whether it's in colleges and universities, whether it's in politics, whether it's in law. Where's the ACLU today? You don't hear a damn thing from any of the former civil libertarian groups about what's taking place here. One Congress idiot tweeted that she's glad that Rudy's under investigation. So the Democrat Party has gone to the dark side. It doesn't believe in the Constitution anymore. I don't want to get too far ahead, but when you listen to Biden's speech, there's not a single thing in there about liberty or unalienable rights or about American sovereignty, nothing, nothing. It's all about government. It's all about redistribution of wealth. It's all about the oppressed versus the oppressor. It's all this Marxist pablum. And this is why I think my listeners, your listeners, so many people in this country are furious. We're watching this. Look at former President Trump. It's as if he doesn't exist anymore. Social media has completely banned him. You don't even see his name on social media in most cases, unless you're going to get whacked. So we're in a very, very dark place right now.
Mark, we know the Southern District of New York is searching for a crime on Trump so that they can prosecute him. One could assume that in the electronic devices that they seized from Rudy Giuliani would be privileged emails between President Trump and his private attorney, his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Could we possibly see them coming back and saying, oh, but look what we found? We didn't find anything about what we were looking for, but look what we did find in these privileged communications between the president and his attorney.
You hit on a very, very important point. Also, by seizing the information, now Rudy has to try and get information back, certain privileges. The former president perhaps has to now figure out how to assert certain privileges. So the government turned this entire process on its head. Because typically what happens is when you're turning stuff over, you turn over a list, and the list is what you claim are privileged documents, and the court has to look over it, whether it's attorney-client privilege in this case, presidential executive privilege, other privilege claims or confidentiality claims. So now the government took it all, is probably going through it, and Rudy's going to have to go through the process and the expense of trying to limit what they can view. What they did here is very fascistic. This is not the way it's supposed to work. You're innocent until proven guilty. You haven't even been charged with anything yet. They take all your digital information, but as I say, except for the Hunter Biden stuff, and now you're in the position of begging to get your information back so you can assert your constitutional privileges. Where's the American Bar Association or the New York Bar Association? They're all corrupt. They've all been devoured by the hard left. But you're right. The real target here is President Trump.
You know, you spoke a moment ago, Mark, about the threat to individual liberties that is definitely here and how the president didn't talk about the defense of those liberties. In fact, in his speech this week, he repeated a line that he's used recently where he says that no constitutional amendment is absolute. He went on to say, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. When you heard those words, what did you think?
First of all, you know how that case ended? That you could yell fire in a crowded theater. It's amazing how people keep quoting that case, Oliver Wendell Holmes. They're so stupid, they don't even know what the case says. Now, that said, no amendment is absolute. Now, if that is your mindset, that means the Constitution is whatever you say the Constitution is. And so I've talked about this over the decades, that basically the Democrat Party and the hard left believe in an endless constitutional convention. They try to amend the Constitution through statute. They try to amend it through executive order. They try to amend it through the district court, cherry-picked judge who will support their view. But they never go through the amendment process. Why? Because the American people aren't going to support in the numbers that are required what they want to do. You need two-thirds of the House of the Senate and three-fourths of the state legislatures, a super-duper majority to get these things done, or convention of states, you go through the other way. They never even think about that. They are in a constant mode of trashing the Constitution. They use the Constitution to destroy the Constitution. And they use our liberty to destroy our liberty. And this is a puzzle. Using liberty to destroy liberty that mankind has not figured out yet, because the tyrants and the evil people, whether it's Black Lives Matter or Antifa or this guy in the White House, they abuse our liberty to destroy it.
Now, you've laid the groundwork for another important conversation, and it's about what's in your book, American Marxism. More with Mark Levin in just a moment. It's 7:44 on WMA.
Yeah, I always flip out the kids that take my master's class on fiscal policy and public budgets when the first three or four classes are devoted to philosophy of social justice and how you organize society.
You know, it's part of everything, right? What a foundation.
Just so you guys know, you're on the mic in the auditorium.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that was two university professors from Roosevelt University in Illinois talking about social justice and how they teach that in their classes. And you heard that. And Mark Levin joining us, the great one. And you hear that, Mark, and you predicted this years ago, more than 10 years ago. You started writing about the road that we were on, the road to Marxism. And that's what your new book, American Marxism, which comes out July 13th, you can pre-order it. But that's what it talks about. How did we get here? When a class on economics deals with social justice?
You know, I'm somewhat limited in what I can say, but I always break the rules with my publisher, so it doesn't matter that much.
they love you anyway.
All, they love me anyway. First of all, we have to call it what it is. Social justice, democratic socialism, they dance around. This is American Marxism. It doesn't have to fit every category of Marxism in the Communist Manifesto and all the other screeds that Marx and Engels wrote, but fundamentally it's American Marxism. Oppressor and oppressed, class warfare. These are the general theories, these are the fundamentals of the Democrat Party and academia today, and not just them. So it's time to expose them for what they are and to call them what they are. And I'm pleased to say, because I hammer this on radio and TV constantly, people are starting to pick up on this. These are Marxists. What do you mean by social justice? You hear what they say? They want to rejigger society. What do you mean you want to rejigger society? We have a constitutional republic. You don't get to do that. Oh, yes, we do. Now, how do I know what they're up to? Because over 100 years ago, I wrote a book, Rediscovering Americanism and the Tyranny of Progressivism. What is progressivism? What is it? It is the bastard child of Marxism. When you look at the intellectuals behind progressivism, including Woodrow Wilson, but John Dewey and the others, these were people who were extremely sympathetic to Karl Marx. Karl Marx wrote his stuff. He died. For 40 years, nobody cared about Karl Marx. Then people began breathing life into his writings, including American intellectuals. Our whole school system changed for John Dewey. And I'm not talking about the Dewey Decimal, so that's a different John Dewey. John Dewey. They changed the classroom. In 1928, he goes to Stalin's Russia. He likes what he sees, the indoctrination of the students. He says this is for a unitary social justice, and he goes on and on and on. And he has enormous influence in schooling, and you can see where it takes us today. And I expose him and talk about what he does. When you read some of the current Marxists today. They rely on him. It's in journalism. It is in entertainment. You hear it in the classroom. It is the exception to teach Americanism. They are teaching Marxism. What I try to do here is I teach it too. I take the veneer off in plain English. I'm not going to spend a ton of time in the book on it because there's been many treaties written about it. Then I talk about, look at the table of contents, breeding the mobs. We're breeding the mobs in the classroom, the Hate America, Inc. mobs, racism, genderism, and Marxism, another chapter, climate change. We don't even look at climate change properly. Here's just a little taste, a footnote. Look at the Earth. It's a big place.
Yeah.
We have never drilled more than a few miles into the Earth's surface. Do you realize we haven't even touched the surface of the surface of the surface of the Earth? And they talk about, oh, we're depleting our resources. And so, are they out of their minds? They don't even understand what the Earth is. And I just go on about this. But more than that, this is the longest book I've ever written. It's the most important book I've ever written. And in the last chapter, I use 10,000 words to talk about things that we need to do, not just whine about it, but things that we have to do to go on offense. So,
you know, Mark,
go ahead.
You know, it's okay. You know, a moment ago you mentioned that, you know, the left has been using terms to kind of conceal their intentions, like progressive. But the reality is, it seems like lately it's more brazen than ever. You've gotten to the point where one of the co-founders of Black Lives Matter refers to herself as a trained Marxist. One of the leading presidential candidates in the Democratic Party was a socialist. So a guy who calls himself a Democratic socialist, but a socialist, Bernie Sanders. It's all of a sudden, it seems like nobody seems to care how damaging those labels once were.
Because the real bomb throwers, the real Molotov cocktail throwers, they'll wear it on their sleeves. They don't care. Marxists who don't do it are the Democrat Party, the leadership of the Democrat Party. We talk about the progressive wing of the Democrat Party. No, that's the Marxist wing of the Democrat Party. And the core Marxist principles, you heard them. If you watched Biden, God forbid, but if you heard him and watched him, it was laced throughout his speech about we got to get the rich, about systemic white racism. This mm-hmm. is oppress, oppress. This is the formula. This is the formula for destroying a country. And you ask yourself, one of the Black Lives Matter leaders said, this guilty plea on Chauvin, that's not enough. They can get all these cops guilty plea, and the cops aren't enough. They don't have to destroy the cops because they're out to destroy the civil society. It has nothing to do with truly with race. That's just, and I explain in the book, how did they racialize Marxism? There's a whole school of thought that was thought kook, fringed, and now it's front and center, and it's in our classroom. So here's my attitude. I'm not writing this book for liberals and so forth. I'm writing this book for us, yeah. Our audience. I want them to know who's doing what, who stole the language, what it means, how we have to inform ourselves, how we as an army of tens of millions have to push back.
That's right.
And what it is we have to do.
All right. Well, if you think Mark Levin's good on radio, you should read his next New York Times bestseller, American Marxism, out July 13th. Pre-order now. Mark Levin, thanks so much for stopping by.
And thank you guys for all you do. God bless.
Always great to talk to you. God bless, sir. 753 on WMAL.
My name is Fallon Brown. Delivered
now, Washington Mornings on the Mall.
Mark Bucher, who's co-owner of the medium rare restaurants in the D.C. area, including a restaurant in Bethesda. Mark, thank you for joining us again. And hey, great news, right?
Hallelujah.
Is this a big difference? Is it a big difference for you, Mark?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, finally, we have a holiday coming up where instead of restricting capacity, which they always did before holidays,
yeah,
like before Memorial Day, before July 4th, now we're raising it up. So it's just good for everyone. It's positive. It's good vibes. We're coming out of this. The whole positive feeling is good for us. It's good for everybody.
Yeah, especially like around, as you mentioned, a holiday coming up, Mother's Day. You know, people do like the kind of the big family celebrations to celebrate mom. And now if they want to get more than 10 people seated in a party, they can do that.
Right. Well, up to 10, and then it was prior up to 6.
Oh, excuse me. Yes.
Now we can do larger parties. But I mean, look, there's some families that haven't seen mom in a year or grandmom in a year, and now they get to see them on Mother's Day, which is amazing.
Yeah, big deal.
Yeah. Now there are still some restrictions in Montgomery County, though, and you have a restaurant in Bethesda. So what are those special restrictions for Montgomery County?
Well, you know, Montgomery County seems to be the last in the region are the slowest to make changes. They do have a reopening plan based on percentage of vaccinations, but it lags far behind CDC guidance and even D.C. and Virginia guidance. I think restaurants are stuck in a fight between the Montgomery County executive and the governor, where one may say the sky is blue and the other might say it's raining. They just don't agree on anything.
Yeah, but then at some point, don't you have to admit that Montgomery County is kind of being abusive?
Oh, 100%. There's no question. Come election time, I hope people think about that in terms of who they vote and keep in and who they want to change out and what kind of attitude they want in Montgomery County. But it has not been pro-business. It has not even been pro-common sense. It's been terrible.
It doesn't make any sense because people from Montgomery County are just going to leave Montgomery County and go to the district or elsewhere to go dine out, right? Which isn't fair to people who own restaurants in Montgomery County. It's just strangling you, to Vince's point. It's abusive. D.C. also announcing that restaurants with outdoor spaces are going to be able to start hosting live music next month, which I wish it were sooner because the weather, the temperatures are really going up. It's really starting to get beautiful out. I really wish it was a lot sooner, like tomorrow, that you could have live music outside. So these are all good things. Do you see people wanting to come back to the restaurants? Do you see people that demand there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I believe we are heading into the biggest resurgence we have ever seen in any economy in our lifetimes. People are getting out. They are spending. Everyone's got pent-up savings, and people are spending, and they're enjoying time. They're spending longer times dining. They're buying better bottles of wine. People are talking to each other again. It's not like everyone's on their phone at a dinner table now. We found it's a whole sea change of attitude. People are actually sitting and they're talking to each other. You know, what have you been doing? How's the past year? Tell me about the kids. Tell me about the family. As opposed to people, you know, we've all seen the families and people on their phones in the middle of meals. We're not seeing that. We're seeing long, engaged conversations, almost like we went back 10 years or 15 years and it's kind of cool to watch. We are in the middle of what's going to be a great resurgence.
Okay, so Mark, if I've been fortunate enough to bank some money during all of this and I'm finally getting back out to a restaurant, say medium rare, what is the most over-the-top steak I could possibly buy in order to emphasize how grateful I am to be back out at your restaurant?
Well, if you come, I will personally make you a golden-crusted ribeye steak.
Holy cow.
Wait. A golden, literally gold?
Sure. But you didn't ask how much. But you know what? Don't. It's not that important. I'll just make it for you. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. All of a sudden, that bill is going to be like as long as a CVS receipt. And it's like,
yeah,
what?
We'll work it out.
The gold encrusted. Wait, do you really do a gold encrusted, or is this something like a special?
No, but I would for you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Sure, of course.
He got wind of Vince having some extra cash sitting around.
He's like, oh, I got extra cash.
How much you got? How hungry are you?
So what about help? Are you having a problem? We've talked to other restaurateurs are having a problem getting servers back and getting front of house staff back and also cooks and things like that. Are you experiencing that at all?
Yeah, we're luckier than most. We made a business decision to keep everybody at any cost because we knew a rehiring was going to be hard, mostly because, you know, there's still a federal unemployment bonus going on right now.
Yeah.
And that's going to go on through September, which is a disaster for restaurants and pools and lifeguarding and all this, because we rely on all this summer help to get us through this busy season. Well, you know what? We've got visa restrictions on kids coming in from overseas, you know, like the lifeguards come in from Russia, Romania, you know, other places. They're not coming. So there's no help at the beaches. There's no help at the pools. And now everyone's making this bonus. So, hey, I'm going to take my summer off. So it's really, really difficult. And it's right on the heels of the restaurant revitalization fund that the unemployment benefit is actually hurting us more than not getting the revitalization fund money. People cannot hire staff quick enough. There's not enough to go around, and they're making more money staying home. So it was an unintended consequence of doing good, at least for the service industry.
Okay, you say it's an unintended consequence. I agree with you, except – we went through this last year. We went through a round of this. We watched as this happened. Everyone was kind of nodding along. Oh, yeah, you know, maybe the way we structured unemployment, you know, created this unfortunate disincentive for people to get to work more quickly. But we did it again, Mark. Like, they passed another package.
Well, you're right.
They did the very same thing. And again, you can't help but point to the government and be like, God, they're kind of abusing you again.
You know, you're right. You know, and it's really, that's really well said. You know, get me once, get me twice, right? But I mean, it's a little bit kind of like recycling. We all know recycling doesn't work. It's too expensive to gather that stuff and reprocess it. But we do it because no elected official will be reelected if they come out and say we're going to end recycling. Well, right. Same with this unemployment benefit stuff. If they said we're not going to do a second round of unemployment, they're never going to get reelected again. So they kind of got stuck. But you know, they could fix it. You know, they could really start managing, making people apply for jobs and making sure that they, if they're made a job offer, they have to take it if it's reasonable. I mean, we have people just applying that don't even call or show for interviews just so they can show the unemployment office that, look, I'm applying for work.
Oh my goodness.
It's that silly. It's that silly right now.
Yeah, it is. But I'm glad to hear that you're not having problems with getting these people back to work and that you are open for business.
Yes.
Mark Bucher with the Medium Rare Restaurants. Love them.
Let's go, guys. We really appreciate it.
And go and ask for the golden crusted steak, but be ready to wash dishes afterwards because you might have to pay it off by washing dishes.
He says,
the price is negotiated based on how hungry you are.
I love that. I love that you're so ready to take my money. I appreciate that, Mark. Thank you.
Let's go.
Mark Bucher, thank you so much for joining us. 8:15.
So in this case with Ashley Babbitt is there are no charges against the officer here. As far as like the criminal side of things, nothing. Nothing. There's nothing to see here. Ashley Babbitt's dead. Her death has been ruled a homicide. But beyond that, no more conversation about the officer, who he is, the circumstances that led him to shoot her. You know, she was unarmed. Why did he make that decision to, rather than take her down, to shoot her? Instead, what was the motivating thing? Was she a threat to someone's life, either somebody who was there or one of the officers? We're not getting any answers like that. And so now her family is saying, wait a second. Somebody needs to pay for this.
And what do we hear all the time from the left? Well, why didn't he use a taser? Why didn't the cop use a taser? Why didn't he shoot her in the leg? Right? Isn't that what we hear from the left all the time? Why did he have to kill her? That's what the left says all the time. They second-guess policing. This time around, total silence. Why? Because she's a Trump supporter, and it was an armed insurrection, and they were threatening the lives of Nancy Pelosi and the rest of Congress. And we now know nobody had weapons. We now know that it was not an armed insurrection. But she's a Trump supporter, and that's a crime because they are racists and they are dangerous people.
You know, and our standard has been the same throughout, which is like, you know, we give police a lot of power, you know, the power over life and death. We put a sidearm on them and ask them to enforce the law. And so when something goes down like this, like, it's a really simple question. Like, what were the circumstances that led to that? And we've assessed every single one of these cases the same exact way. And we're doing it again this morning as we ask this, like, okay, what were the circumstances that led to Ashley Babbitt's death? Explain why you picked up the gun and shot her to death.
And that's the answers they're trying to get. Terry Roberts is their lawyer, and he said he knows the shooter's name and is aware of some of his police service record. He told Zenger News a rookie police officer would not have shot this woman. If she committed any crime by going through the window and into the speaker's lobby, it would have been trespassing, some misdemeanor crime. All a rookie cop would have done is arrest her, and he has plenty of other officers there to assist with the arrest. You had officers on Ashley's side of the door in riot gear and holding submachine guns, and on the other side of the door, you have another uniformed officer 6 or 8 feet away. Whose life is he saving by shooting her? She's not brandishing a weapon. She's on the window ledge, and there's no reason to think she's armed.
These are all perfectly reasonable things and a perfectly reasonable assessment. And so now I'm not surprised at all that her family's taking this position. It's like demanding answers that they haven't been getting and then demanding compensation for the loss of their family member's life. So now they've filed suit.
Yeah, and remember, her death was ruled a homicide, but they have not released the autopsy report. Under D.C. law, only next of kin and officials executing a validly issued subpoena or court order are entitled to the document. And Robert says he has received a copy on the family's behalf. He will be serving the Capitol Police, he said, in the next 10 days. And we will keep track of this as it works its way through the courts. 8:22 on WMA.
The Bidens went down to Georgia. They were going down there to celebrate the 100 days in office. That was officially yesterday. And he wanted to go there and to trumpet his achievements and how he's going to raise taxes on everybody. And then he's going to spend $4 more trillion and how there will be absolutely no consequences to any of that. And your grandchildren won't suffer. yeah, sure. Okay, that's fine. Free stuff for everybody. And that was the game yesterday. And of course, he was fully vaccinated. He is fully vaccinated. And one of the features that has me chuckling, because what else can you do, is watching as he's walking to and fro from Marine One. He's headed to Georgia. He's completely by himself, or just standing next to his wife. Both of them are fully vaccinated, and they're ignoring their own CDC's guidance to not wear the masks outside when you're in these small groups in a completely open space. Yeah, whatever. They just keep wearing the masks anyway, because virtue signaling is the most important thing you can do. Not living up to the standards of the government that you are tasked with leading.
Vince, it's about being virtuous, equitable. Come on. These are the buzzwords we need. Virtuous, equitable. Please be these things.
Yeah. And isn't it interesting that he chose Georgia of all places? I mean, you alluded to it in the tease right before the bottom of the hour. But this idea that, like, he chooses Georgia, the state that just suffered a $100 million loss because of Joe Biden. Now, what I'm talking about is that the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was supposed to be held in Georgia. But then the left, angry that Republicans had advanced a voter integrity law in the state, which, by the way, is nowhere near as stringent as the one in Joe Biden's home state of Delaware. But anyway, they advanced this voter law in Georgia, and Joe Biden and others are referring to this law as Jim Crow 2.0. In fact, Biden used at one point invented a new analogy. He said that this law makes Jim Crow look like Jim Eagle. Remember that? That was about Georgia.
That's right.
And then he was asked whether or not he would support a boycott of Georgia by Major League Baseball. Listen to Cut 15. This is the way he answered that question.
So, Mr. President, what do you think about the possibility that baseball decides to move their All-Star game out of Atlanta because of this political issue?
I think today's professional athletes are acting incredibly responsibly. I would strongly support them doing that.
Okay. Now, as you hear that, Mary, do you think that Joe Biden supports a boycott against Georgia or not?
I'm going to go with yes, Joe Biden supports the boycott of Georgia. And he was just down there rubbing it in their faces, doing a victory lap of like, see, do not go against the party. This is what happens.
Yeah, he was carrying a Louisville Slugger, actually. He kept tapping it on his hand. He said, you want that to happen again?
With his aviators on.
You want the other kneecap to go?
Yeah.
I can do that for you. No, that's right. So that audio that I just played for you, the White House tried to explain it away back when this originally happened. They're like, oh my gosh, Major League Baseball actually decided to pull out of Georgia. And people were saying, well, yeah, Joe Biden supported. They're like, oh, no. He just said he supported the players. He supported whatever decision they made. That audio is crystal clear, ladies and gentlemen. He supported a boycott in Georgia. He supported pulling out of Atlanta, hurting a majority black city, hurting a city with a tremendous number of black small business owners who are now going to be without the $100 million in revenue that they could have derived if the Major League Baseball All-Star Game was actually held there. That's gone. Thanks, President Biden. So on day 100, where does he go? Right to Georgia, Mary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that was more of a message to Stacey Abrams?
Maybe.
You know, this is more of a, we're going to turn Georgia blue, whether you like it or not.
Well, you know what I honestly think that they realized what a screw up they made in Georgia, that this was so stupid of them to run all of this business away from Georgia. I mean, you heard Stacey Abrams do that. Stacey Abrams had USA Today rewrite a column that she had, literally go in and manipulate a column that was under Stacey Abrams' byline when she was expressing generic support for boycotts against Georgia. And sure enough, that happened. So Stacey Abrams got USA Today to change the text of her own op-ed in order to pretend like she never supported boycotts. So they're very, they know that this looks really bad for them. So I think the purpose of Joe Biden picking Georgia yesterday was was an attempt kind of at a mea culpa. Like, okay, he's not going to admit guilt here, but we're going to reward you with a presidential visit. We're going to treat you really nicely. We're going to send Joe Biden to your state.
And can I just say my favorite parts of this whole thing, besides the hypocrisy here,
yeah,
is that it was a drive-in, you know, drive-in rally like he did before, you know, with five people sitting in their cars beeping their horns. They wore masks walking to and from Marine One, and he lost his mask and spent like 30 seconds looking for his mask, and it was in his pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in his pocket. In fact, we'll share a little bit of that with you in just a moment. What okay. was that like in Georgia when he finally arrived in front of a crowd who was a little sore from the last time they had to deal with Joe Biden? 8:43 on W. When in fact, you know, Joe Biden has been taking Georgia down every single time the Democrats have. I mean, think about this. Think about what Georgia did for Biden. He gave Joe Biden power over the entire federal government. Georgia, they put John Ossoff in, they put Raphael Warnock in, you get the vote for Biden in Georgia, gives him all that. And what does he do? Destroys a tenth of $1 billion in business for Georgia immediately. Drives Major League Baseball All-Star Game right out. Oh, remember the promise that was being made ahead of the special election for these senators, for the runoff election? They said, they're running around, what were they promising Georgians? They said, as soon as you elect us, you will be getting $2,000 checks, every single one of you, $2,000 checks. What happened? Never happened. They never got $2,000 checks. They got stiffed on that. They got played. They got played. And that's their payback. So now the White House thinks they can smooth it all over by sending Biden to Georgia and playing some Jackie Wilson. Hey, maybe if we just do those two things, everything's going to be fine in Georgia.
So... I just got a message from a friend. There is a bar. I don't know where this bar is, and Vince and I talked about the video off the air, but there's a bar who will play, they have a party, and it's Joe Biden stumbling, different video clips. And, like, unreal. If he falls, they go, oh, everybody in the bar is like, and they have all their big screen TVs. And, like, if he makes it up the steps of Air Force One, everybody cheers, right? They're like, maybe they can do a mask edition. You know, Joe Biden's searching for his mask, and if he doesn't find it, they're like, oh, and then when he finds it, everybody's like, yeah!
I'll tell you, here, I'll give you a drinking game. Here's this. So this is maybe because of the season. It may be because of the allergies. But here's Joe Biden yesterday, cut 18. If you were to take a drink every time he started hacking during his speech yesterday, boy, you'd be on the floor.
And not. And we. I'm most kidding.
Oh.
Or 10 minutes.
Oh boy.
So, second, so understand. And they were working.
Oh boy.
Thank you.
You may want to check on his lungs and whether or not they popped up into his mouth at all. He sounds like he hacked one up yesterday.
Yeah, well, listen, I can't throw stones at people with coughing right now because of allergies.
That's right.
You've heard me several times on the air. I'm like, hold on, because my voice is going. But maybe we could do. A compilation set to music of him and Hillary.
Yeah.
Choking.
They could have a hack off.
Coughing and hacking. You know, I'm surprised that Jill didn't run over with a hard candy.
Uh-huh. She's got one. There's a lozenge.
You know she does in her pocket. She unwraps it for him and puts it in a tissue.
Well, she is a doctor, you know. So
that's true.
She could respond to something like that. There was some policy that came up and a reminder of why they don't like Joe in public. Because yesterday there were some people who were yelling at him. Some hecklers, who very left-wing, of course. They want him to close private detention centers and to abolish immigration and customs enforcement. So they were yelling about this. And here's how the president of the United States responded to those demands.
Oh, no.
Close private detention centers now, please!
I agree with you. I'm working on it, man. Give me another 5 days.
All right, so a new headache for the White House to deal with today is as people are screaming, abolish ICE! And the president of the United States is like, I'm right there with you, buddy. Just give me 5 days.
I'm working on it, man. Just give me. If he starts calling hecklers chief, I will lose it, because that's what my dad used to do at the gas station. Fill it up with $5 a regular, chief. And we would just in the back seat, we just cringe going, oh, God, Dad just called the gas station guy chief. Like everybody was chief.
How would you have reacted if your dad said, look, fat, Fill it up.
Well, that would have been horrible.
What if your dad said, hey, you lying dog-faced pony soldier, we need to fill up the tank, would you?
I almost just made a very tasteless joke, and I stopped myself before I said it.
I learned something this morning. Mary Walter.
You did. I do have the neuron, and every now and then it kicks in.
8:52 on WMAL.